Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Pisgah Podcast.
We are your hosts. I'm Drew, that's Mangler, and we're coming to you live from Wash Creek Horse Camp. Well, Mangler, what's in the news this week?
Well, I think the weather has been phenomenal for news, but I just want to remind everyone, it's still winter, so don't be fooled by this spring of deception we've been having. You know, one of our subseason genres that'll get sneaky on you.
That's true. Yeah, I'll say for our winter thus far, though, minus a few cold snaps, it's been pretty mild and it's been extremely dry.
Yeah, so hopefully with these mild temps, everyone's been getting after it and getting some rides in. For some reason, I keep finding myself frequently in the Mills River zone, and apparently so is everyone else. It's been quite a social gathering post-rides as of late, which is awesome to have.
Yeah, me too. I'm finding myself over on that side a little bit more frequently as well. I even got to ride out there with you the other weekend.
Yeah.
But yeah, less allergies, more riding.
But for news-wise, the G5 Collective has been real busy over in Old Fort. We've already got a couple of new trails for them, and they just announced that their next phase of trail building is going in, and it's going to be a big one.
That's right, 40-ish miles of new trails. And one thing I'm stoked on is some of those higher-up new trails. That terrain is just so different and cool. Like up at Newberry, there's just no undergrowth, and you can see pretty far, like good sight lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do love that high terrain in Pisgah. I've heard tell of quite a lot of cool rock features up in that zone from Christian Jackson and some of those people that have been scouting it. So, yeah.
Right. And if you look at what's kind of adjacent from there, places that are a little bit more known to be rocky, one thing that a lot of people might not realize is that when the parkway was being built, what was that, in the 40s through the 60s, a lot of that rock that they were blasting out so that they could put the parkway in went rolling down the hill. So a lot of those spots around there, like Spencer Gap, being close to the parkway, mm-hmm. a lot of that rock just came tumbling down the hill from the parkway to help give that zone its extra rocky texture. So I'm imagining that zone between Heartbreak and Newberry Creek having a lot of that type of material in there as well. And hopefully they'll offer some pretty cool riding options.
Yeah. That's something that I've seen in some other zones too, but like just the flora and fauna up high, it's just different enough that it kind of gives me some like British Columbia vibes, you know? And I love those BC vibes with like the evergreen firs, moss-covered rocks, and you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, and while our beloved British Columbia is covered in snow, we've been riding t-shirts as spring approaches. That also means racing season's starting up. We're headed out to Chattanooga area this weekend for the first downhill Southeast race weekend. That will be at the Trials Training Center in Sequatchie. And if you want to hear more downhill-oriented content, then check out the Gravity Co-op Hot Seat podcast. We've got some other races starting to fire off as well, so we've got a lot of races to cover on that side of things.
Yeah, and here in the Western North Carolina region, you know, last weekend kicked off the Pisgah Triple Crown, but that was down in Uari. Drew, that's a spot that we probably both have spent a good amount of time riding in, but never together.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. When we were both Piedmont boys, that area was kind of dead between the middle of where you and I were living, huh? And I spent a lot of time back in my high school days, early 2000s, riding out there because it was closer than the mountains when I was living in Charlotte.
And those are some of the oldest mountains in the world, apparently.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I've got some fond memories hanging out in Uari and around Baden Lake.
That area is also a hotbed for Sasquatch encounters. And I actually worked on one of those Sasquatch TV shows, like Hunting Bigfoot or whatever. I don't remember the name.
Really?
Of it. This was like 15 years ago or so. Yeah. Yeah. If you hit up the general store there, they got like all this Sasquatch memorabilia and stuff.
I have spent a lot of time out in those woods, and I've never seen a Sasquatch, but I can tell you this, I've spent enough time there that one has definitely seen me.
Well, in all manners, I'm sure.
Yeah.
With spring approaching, that means Pisgah stage race is about a month out.
Yeah, April 9th. So get ready for that.
Yeah, so that'll be a big one.
One thing I love about the stage race, Mangler, is that the amount of trail work that goes into getting those stages prepared kind of cleans things out and gets things primed for us and ready for the heavy season.
Well, yeah, that is a good point.
And there's some other local rad news. Over the last few years, there's been a big push and a lot of interest in an Asheville area pump track, bike park type of scenario. And I think there's a petition to the city going around, you know, maybe up until right around COVID era, but it kind of died out in lieu of some pickleball courts. But anyway, some local entrepreneurs in the area have come together to revitalize the old blanket mill in Swannanoa, the Beacon Blanket Factory, into a bike park, recreation trail, and event space. The bike park construction starts this spring with completion in the summer. And I believe the article that I read in the Asheville Citizen Times said that Velo Solutions was on board to build the pump track.
Man, that'll be real cool to get over on that side of town, you know, especially with a Velo Solutions style pump track. And it's one of those cool things, you know, it's like an asphalt style material laid down to make the pump track surface, which means like minimal maintenance. And most importantly, like that stuff's pretty grippy in the rain still. So as soon as it stops raining, rip some laps.
That's true. And, you know, one thing I remember when they first started building these asphalt pump tracks was the service life. They were saying they would expect to get 10 years out of them. And here we are about 16 years later after their start, and very few have actually had the issues needed that required them to completely, you know, pull them up and rebuild them.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Well, wet weather is definitely one of those things that affects our trail riding opportunities, both good and bad. But when it comes to trail maintenance and volunteer work, we're very happy to have a Backcountry Horseman chapter here in Pisgah.
Yes, we absolutely are. And they help a ton with trail work here in the forest, especially the deeper, hard-to-get-to spots. So this week, a new short film on the Backcountry Horseman of Pisgah debuted on the Great Trails NC social media channels. You can also find it on the North Carolina Horse Council's YouTube page or by clicking in the link in our show notes. But after working a little on that film with director Tommy Pienick and producer Daniel Sapp, who listeners know is some close friends of us here on the podcast, I wanted to dive a little deeper into what the Backcountry Horsemen of Pisgah have going on with Tom Thomas and Courtney Carter.
Yep, I got a chance to watch the film a little bit ago, and I really can't wait to listen to this interview and hear more about the Backcountry Horsemen.
Courtney, Tom, thank you guys for swinging by the studio here, hanging out with us for just a little bit. Been working on a project with you guys over the past, I don't know what, year or so, on a really cool video documentary project that kind of showcases some of what Backcountry Horsemen are doing in the National Forest. Tom, you've been at the helm of this for a little while, so kind of give me a brief introduction and a little intro about who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm Tom Thomas. I'm a past principal in Transylvania County as well as a teacher, and I am retired. I have been honored to work with the Forest Service as a volunteer for almost 50 years now, and since I retired, I have worn different hats. I've been vice president of Backcountry Horsemen of America. I'm still on the executive committee for Backcountry Horsemen of America. I'm presently president of the Pisgah chapter of Backcountry Horsemen, and I'm past president of the North Carolina Horse Council. Along with that, my main focus has been sustaining trails in Pisgah National Forest. I can take you back very quickly to when Art Rowe was head ranger, which he was there for many, many years. There were no mechanized vehicles on Pisgah Forest. It was either the only mechanized tool we got to use was chainsaws. There were no ATVs to bring in equipment and materials. It was all done by hand. Digging was done by Hazel Hose and Pulaski's and Sweat Equity. And we packed in materials and equipment throughout Pisgah National Forest during that time. We're right now, they're using ATV to move gravel and logs and so on. Occasionally we're called where an ATV can't go. We can still pack our mules and horses and carry in examples. If they're making a bog bridge, we'll carry in 10-foot 6x6s on each side of a mule or walking horse and get them in as far as we can so they can construct those bridges to save the environment. But it's been great. It's been a good working relationship, and we also work closely with Carolina Mountain Club, Sorba, and we find out in the backcountry pretty much everybody's courteous to everybody else, and it's a good experience for everyone.
Awesome. And Courtney, you're kind of new to the horse scene a little bit, so give us a little introduction.
Yeah, well, I'm new to backcountry horsemen, at least. I've been involved with horses for, you know, since I was a kid, but I've also got a bit of a mountain bike background as well, so having that blend is kind of been a good asset for backcountry horsemen, I think, just knowing both sides of each world. So yeah, I've been with backcountry horsemen for about a year now.
You're local here. You grew up here.
Yeah.
So it's cool to have you involved with a club like this after all these years of recreating.
Yeah, I've been here for my whole life. I grew up here. Yeah. My dad he founded the outdoor education program at Brevard College. So, you know, since a kid, I've always been running around in Pisgah and getting to know these trails and getting to, you know, appreciate them and in all kinds of different ways. But yeah, appreciating them on horseback has been a new thing for me. So it's been cool. I've learned a lot from Tom and just about how important it is to keep doing it, to keep horses out in the woods and do it right and just be a part of this community that's making a difference.
Since you've been recreating in the woods, can you think of a time of when you first knew of backcountry horsemen?
Yeah, so I heard of backcountry horsemen well, I knew about them for a long time, but I started hearing more about them when I was working in the mountain bike industry. I worked at Industry 9 for a while, and I raced on a Brevard College's cycling team. And I kept hearing about this awesome group that goes out on horseback, and everyone talks so fondly of them, which is really cool to hear mountain bikers talking so highly of people on horses, because you don't hear that very often.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
I mean, you know, but so it's, I think the work that backcountry horsemen does is really appreciated by cyclists who understand exactly what they're doing and how it's affecting everybody.
Yeah. So. Probably my first hearing mention of them was probably one of my first early times riding Pisgah, just being deep out in the far edge of Squirrel Gap or something like that, and seeing a bunch of fresh cut trees.
Yeah.
And just mentioned to my buddy Daniel, dude, who hiked all the way out here with a chainsaw to cut these trees? I'm like, oh, that's backcountry horsemen do that.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, so they come in here on horseback with chainsaws? Mm. He's like, yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. And so that was kind of my first introduction. And I always knew of the club.
Yeah.
And we're used to seeing horses going up to Middle Black or over in Turkey Pen Trail Zone. And
North
I just see
Mills.
Those as recreational horses.
Yeah. You
know? I'd never seen the group out doing anything. Yeah. But you would know that they had been there.
Yeah.
Because you're deep out and you're oh, it's fresh cut trees.
Yeah.
Horse prints.
It's awesome. Pretty cool. I've run into some folks that I know from back when I worked in the mountain bike industry. When I've been with backcountry horsemen we've got the chainsaws and the orange helmets and everything. And you can tell we're out there to work. And it's cool when they'll stop and say hi and thank us. And I'm like, oh, hey. And they're like, Courtney, what are you doing up there? You know? So that's always a fun moment to have. Yeah. But it's neat. I think most cyclists really appreciate seeing us out there.
Yeah. So, Tom, I know that a couple of different kind of groups will focus on certain areas of the forest, but it seems like you guys kind of focus on the deep, hard to get to spots. Talk to me about that.
Well, Courtney mentioned, it's a whole lot easier, and I think you noticed that too, for us to carry chainsaws and plaskies and hazel hoes to making reverse grades or rolling grade dips and cutting the big timber off the trails. Some of the good examples of that is we were talking about biking and bikers, and we, like I said, we have a good working relationship with Sorba. They've mentioned to us several times the middle part of Squirrel Gap, which is not open to equestrians. I'm not sure why, but it's very difficult for them to get in there and take timber out. And, you know, I've told them often if it was approved for us to go in there, we'd take care of it. But right now it's not. But anywhere from 6 miles, four and a half miles in, it's usually there's a few people that'll strap a chainsaw to their back and ride their bike in, which can be dangerous. But we have a safe way to carry them on pack animals as well as a single horse. So it's more feasible for us to do it. And once we get there, we still got the energy to do the work. Yeah. And that's a big
part.
That's
a good point. Yeah.
Really, yeah, like, right.
And for what it's worth, I may have mentioned my son's in Salt Lake City. So when I visit him, I have a specialized stump jumper that I have to work on for about 2 months to get my legs in shape, because he'll want to go down to Moab or Park City and ride mountain bikes. And he's a few years younger than I am, so I got to prepare my legs. Keeps me in good shape, though.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's anywhere from 4.5 miles in the wilderness area. Yeah. Bikes are not allowed in there, and it's all cross-cut work. It's cross-cut and axe work, labor-intensive, sweat equity. But we'll put the boots on the ground and get the job done.
Yeah, that's one thing I don't think a lot of people realize about wilderness is, like, of course, bikes aren't allowed, but also chainsaws aren't allowed.
Right. So, even a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, even a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, if it's got a wheel and rolls.
Anything mechanical.
Yeah.
What projects are you working on right now? Because I know you've been kind of posted up deep in the forest for a little bit.
Well, right now I'm working on South Mose River to keep it open for everyone. Riverside Trail, which has about 9 stream crossings on it. I just got a report there's timber down, and the different groups will report to us. That's another good example. With 7 river crossings, it's more difficult for foot travel and for bikes to get in there and do any constructive work. But that's one of those trails we're allowed on, so we keep it open, and we'll be getting in there shortly. And the other thing we did is, because we're not allowed in to RV camps like Kirkendall, Davison River, North Mills River campgrounds, we actually built a horse camp out on Wolf Ford Road in Pisgah National Forest. And it was unique history, because Charles Taylor, when he was in Congress, actually gave us a letter of recommendation for a horse camp out there, because he saw the inadequacies of the RV camps not allowing horses. So now we have a horse camp that is dedicated to horses, and it's on governmentreservations.gov now, so horsemen can come from long distances and know they have a place they can camp, and real suitable for them. And then we got support from the Washington, D.C. The head of the Forest Service sent out a white paper saying horse camps really should be dedicated to horses, because the equestrians are not being allowed in other campsites. And we appreciated that very much. How it's being enforced depends on the head ranger at the forest level.
Okay. Yeah, so that's the horse camp out there on Yellow Gap Road at the intersection there. And I've hunkered down at that bathroom in a thunderstorm before, so I know it well.
We have a lot of people drop by to use that bathroom, bikers, hikers a lot. And, you know, even though it's a reserved campsite, common courtesy says, you know, keep it open for those folks in need.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of good car camping spots along Yellow Gap Road and down towards the gauging station and stuff. So it's not like there's not other options there.
Right. Well, and the key is, that's Wash Creek and Wolf Ford are the only two places equestrians can reserve and actually go to.
Yeah, we're limited.
The rest of them, we're not allowed in them.
Okay.
So fair and equitable, that's the reason it's a horse camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to keep doing the work that we do, we got to keep those spots available.
Yeah, and it took only about 15 years to build it. So
yeah, a lot of work went into it.
And it was in conjunction with the Forest Service, of course, and North Carolina Horse Council put in $30,000-$40,000 to get it done. And it's really a fine horse camp.
Nice.
Yeah, it's set up for horses. It's got high lines and everything we need to keep horses there comfortably. And
nice.
So,
does it have power or anything?
No power. We're hoping to put in a pump well sometime in the future.
Hand pump.
And just to make it more convenient. Mm-hmm. Thompson Creek is close by, so you can get buckets of water for horses there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we enjoy it. And we've had other folks camp out there. It's just the priority has been horses, and we hope to keep it that way.
Yeah. Are there any other horse-only camp spots, like in the Grandfather District or anything?
Harmon's Den in that's not Grandfather District, that's the Appalachian District,
yeah,
has a horse camp. But now, again, it's not total horse camp. It's the primary use is horses. But other folks have camped there in the past outside the horse area.
Mm-hmm.
So, and But I don't think grandfather, I can't think of one in grandfather right now.
Yeah, I can't think of one either. No. Okay, interesting. Do you get up in that side of the forest much?
We do when they need help with certain things, mm-hmm. like Nantahala over in Panthertown. There's a lot of equestrian trails out there, so we help them keep that open. And they have a group. Fortunately, there's a lot of volunteers that are working. I don't think Pisgah District or any district has a dedicated professional work group in the forest, except Pisgah Conservancy has formulated a work group that has been phenomenal in our Pisgah district. The Pisgah Conservancy money and resources goes strictly to the Pisgah district. And thanks to the membership, which has been phenomenal, it's been a very successful group. And if you go on any trails in Pisgah National Forest right now, I think you'll see where they have worked.
Nice. Yeah. Courtney, as someone new coming into Backcountry Horsemen, how do you see the club growing?
Well, I think we got to get more young folks involved, which is happening. But, you know, we need to keep that. We need to keep it going. So one of my big focuses personally is to just try to recruit some folks in my age and just keep the excitement going. Because, yeah, we've got a big responsibility. We've got to carry the torch, you know.
Yeah.
So
how are you seeing interest of, you know, younger people, especially in like a heavy outdoor recreation community? Mm-hmm. It's heavy bikes and foot travel and stuff here, not as much new horse people coming up.
Well, a lot of just equestrians that friends of mine that I have that, you know, show down at Tryon Equestrian Center, do mm-hmm. a totally different kind of riding. When they find out that I'm a part of this group that goes out in the woods and uses horses for work, they're very interested. That's very interesting to them.
Cool.
Because horses traditionally were used for work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think they know that they're serving a purpose and they're happy to do their job. Tom can attest to that. His
yeah.
horses love it. And I think that really catches the attention of a lot of equestrians, whether they're big trail riders or not. So yeah, I think we just got to keep broadcasting. And I've worked in marketing for over 10 years now. And so I'm like, how can I help like really get the word out?
Yeah.
That's my, you mm-hmm. know, passion right now and what I want to do for Backcountry.
Nice.
But also just bring in a lot more new folks. But I think just getting the word out, because we've been, Backcountry Horsemen has been a little just not hush-hush, but, you know, a little quiet for a while.
I agree
just
with
doing,
Courtney.
Doing
yeah.
their work and getting it done and working hard and not focused on, you just haven't had anybody to come in and like really push promoting, I think, y'all. It's a work group, not a social group, as Tom likes to say.
I agree with Courtney totally. We don't want to be the best kept secret.
Yeah.
And ironically, horses and mules actually built Bavard, built Rosman. If you go back in the history, you will see not motor graders, but mule pulled graders. But as time goes by, the big focus in Bavard has been mountain bikes. They mm-hmm. have advertised mountain bikes tremendously, even though hiking is still the major resource here. And then bikers are next. And we're, you know, there may be 10,000 bikes come through Pisgah District in a year. There's probably 3,000 equestrians and thousands of hikers.
Yeah.
But we don't want to be the best kept secret. And marketing is a big part of it. We're in 31 states.
Yeah.
Backcountry Horsemen of America is in 31 states. And it's a very popular area to work on. And here, ironically, we have the National Equestrian Center, one county away, and horse farms and ranches throughout the area in Polk County and Columbus area. And a fence is down there for jumping and equestrian use.
Huge horse country.
About 72% of the people that show horses do trail riding. So with the right marketing, it's been very helpful. Even some of the things that Courtney's done, we had 4 new members show up at our last meeting last night, and they're saying we got 3 and 4, 6 members that we want to bring next time. So it's helping. And marketing is the big thing. If they don't hear about it on a regular basis,
don't know about it.
Don't know about it.
And I like doing that, so.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how does, in the overall big window of equestrian participation, like how many people are actually going out trail riding versus like riding around the farm and stuff like that?
I think a lot of people don't know how to navigate the woods, and that they're scared to like go out and Pisgah or places that we're going, because the knowledge of like trails and reading a map isn't there. So a lot of equestrians just stick to the trails they know, but I think they would like to, but just the education isn't quite there.
Part of it, I think she's hitting a nail on the head. It's part of it's just getting started. They look at the Pisgah District as a wilderness area, and rightfully so. You don't need to go out there without a map.
Yeah, smart.
And they just need someone to help them get started. And we have a lot of people join our group. We have about 60 members, and about 25 of them are boots on the ground workers, which is a good thing. But a lot of them join just to have the information they need to go out and where you park your car. Are you going to get out there and not be able to turn your trailer around?
Yeah.
And I know the bikers are having the same problem, because biking groups are going out there with trailers now. And if you get in the wrong spot, it can be a nightmare turning around a trailer. But
a la turkey pin.
Yeah.
Turkey pin. Yeah.
Well, and now, finally we got a dedicated trailer parking at Turkey Pin, which makes it a lot safer for equestrians. Mm-hmm. That
you got to be skilled to back in a trailer still.
And yet we are majorly responsible for converting that from about 5 cars and 2 trailers to where you can park almost 20 cars out there and half a dozen trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things Backcountry Horsemen of Pisgah dedicated themselves to getting done. And that's in the forest plan, by the way, to expand the parking lots.
Okay.
So hopefully they'll carry through with that.
Just to kind of, we've been mentioning some spots, but if someone's coming to recreate in Pisgah on horseback, where do you usually suggest them? Like, what's like the green entry level horse spot?
I would, right off the bat, I'd say Turkey Pen, because they're assured of parking up there. And there's so many loop trails. There's an hour and a half, 2-hour ride, or you can have a 3-hour ride or a 4-hour ride. And if you're real serious about it, you can ride 30-some miles.
You can just disappear in the woods for a while.
Horses can get you really far really fast.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
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 And you got to know where you're going.
You carry your own first aid kit. It's kind of self-sustaining. But you find somebody that's done it before. And Backcountry Horsemen is one of our major goals, to educate people.
We always have a safety meeting before our rides. And tailgate meetings. Who's doing what? Somebody always has a GPS tracker of some sort. We've always got a plan, too, if something goes sideways, what we're going to do, which I think that's really important.
You mentioned that you get reports of timber down, trail washout, stuff like that. How do you go from getting that report to making action?
Well, it's for us, it's very simple. That's what we're dedicated to doing. So the third weekend in the month is dedicated to trail work. But as soon as we hear something's down, we just tell the Forest Service we're going to be out there. And either I or one of the trail bosses will set up the equipment needed to do the job. And we'll get it done within 2 or 3 days. And we wish there was a few more trails open to equestrians. Mainly for the work, but also to loops. I think bikers and hikers and as well as equestrian love loop trails. Plus, it puts less impact on the trail.
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, equestrians and bikers and hikers, sometimes they get a black eye, I would say, from saying they're doing trail damage. Well, there's a lot of folks out there trying to avoid that. But the biggest trail damage that can ever be done in Pisgah National Forest is by rain, fast-moving water.
Yep.
And that calls for reverse grades and grade dips. And if you want to see some of that done properly, go to Turkey Pen. We just refinished the Turkey Pen trail down to the bridge for foot travel and to the water crossing for equestrians and fly fishermen and kayakers. There's so much they can do in there. But yeah, we get to it in a pretty short amount of time because we're not thinking we've got to strap a chainsaw to our back and walk 3 miles and cross 7 streams. We're sitting in a saddle. We're watching where we're going. We're enjoying the environment. And the mules and horses take care of the heavy weight. So, and the safety equipment. We'll chaps and helmets and ear devices. We make sure we go by the highest standard of safety.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And anyone who's doing it, who's our sawyer for the day, is chainsaw certified, has done the class and this, you know, knows what they're doing. So.
Yeah. I keep meaning to get my chainsaw certification.
Me too. Let's go together.
Okay.
I need to get mine.
You mentioned that. The next course should be coming up in May.
Yeah.
They're waiting for the federal government to turn loose some money, but we're looking to have one in May, and we invite bikers to attend that. Usually it's a smaller class. It's like 6 to 8 people, depending on how many instructors, which I'm one of. So hopefully we'll get that off the ground. It'll be April or May. We have that course, so look forward to having you.
We also have a packing clinic coming up, right, Tom?
Yep. The end of May, we have a 4-day packing clinic in conjunction with the Wilderness Skills Institute. That'll be at the Cradle of Forestry. And the head of that, Katie, is working on the details on that right now. And it'll be set up at Wolf Ford Horse Camp. And we'll be out there 4 days teaching the basics of safety around horses, all the way to packing 6x6 timbers that are 10 feet long on timber bunks and Decker saddles and sawbucks. And yeah.
That's going to be a really special thing to learn, because, that's hard to. There's not a lot of education about that in this area. If you're going to hear about it, it's going to probably come from backcountry horsemen, but that's something people would go out west to learn or. So it's pretty unique. It's pretty special that that's going to be happening right here.
That's awesome. Courtney, what's been like a cool, memorable project that you've been part of?
Probably that camp weekend that we did out.
Wolf Ford.
I've had kind of a crazy year, so I'm just now kind of starting to get to the point where I can get back out on the trail.
Well, it's important people know that folks in backcountry horsemen are working full time.
Yeah.
And then they're taking their off time to go in the forest and
or
do more
kids
work
or,
and sweat equity and putting their boots on the ground and making the trail safer for all who travel there. And Courtney's no different. She's, working full time, and yet she spends her weekends out on trail. So us retired buzzards have it good. So
that's a great way to spend your retirement, I think.
Tom, what's some good memorable projects that you guys have gotten into recently?
Well, let's see. We improved the Wash Creek Horse Camp. We actually built, like I said, it was about a 15-year period, the Wolf Ford Horse Camp, which gave sustainable places for equestrians to camp. We have been working on South Mills River and the river trail. Again, once you're in 4.5 miles to what we call the Cantrell Creek Chimney, from that point forward on South Mills River, there's 10 river crossings.
That's like that little window there of South Mills River Trail that I've yet to try to go through.
Well, don't do it on high water if you're doing it on a bike. But again, Pisgah Conservancy, we worked with them to clear all the dog hobble, and a lot of people don't worry about dog hobble. And we're doing that mainly for the bikers, because you have spokes and gears in the back, and your derailleur just does not work well when dog hobble is sunk into it.
It's getting all jammed up in there.
In my case, I use any excuse in the backcountry because I feel alive and well when I'm on dirt and in the forest, where I'm kind of existing when I'm on asphalt and concrete. So if it's fly fishing, if it's mountain biking, if it's equestrian, if it's small game, big game hunting, I'm pretty much involved with all of it. So I have a good perspective on where people are coming from. And our water quality around here is phenomenal, and we need to keep it that way.
Yeah.
And that's one of our main goals when we're out doing trail work. We try to keep silt away from the streams, not into them. But I'd say South Mills River was a big project because it's about a 22-mile loop. We do South Mills River, and then we get Squirrel Gap to Horse Cove, from Horse Cove to Cantrell Creek, and then back down South Mills River. So equestrians can do that in a day or a couple days at the most, where if you're on foot travel, it'd take you weeks to complete that area.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And we're fortunate that we don't have any big corporations or construction areas above Pisgah National Forest, because that's still the main source of silt and dirt in the streams.
Mm-hmm. So you guys probably work some with, like, the trout fishermen and stuff as well?
Oh, yeah. It's Pisgah Trout Society and group there. We have, I think, 4 or 5 Trout Unlimited groups in the area who all work on streams. They even have a cleanup day on Episcopal Work Day where they go out and clean up trash around the streams. I've been involved with them putting up split rail fences. So even trout fishermen just don't go in the stream at every location, but locations that are more suitable so that silt and dirt won't get into the water.
Yeah. You mentioned something earlier about when you're in the backcountry, everybody's happy to see each other. And I think that's something important to think about, especially bringing that to the front country as well, is being happy to see other people.
I agree with you totally. I know we've got equestrians that they frown on bikers, and bikers frown on equestrians and foot travel. But when they see people with sweat equity and boots on the ground, whether they're a biker, a hiker, or equestrian, they have a newfound care and love for them being out there. You know, we work in Pisgah, but our other focus is in the Smoky Mountains National Park, where there's 560 plus miles of equestrian trails. They give us a chainsaw window, usually in April, to clear as many trails as we can if you're chainsaw certified and have all the regulations followed. And there's about 45 miles of Appalachian Trail that's open to equestrians. And most people don't know that. But once you're out there, you're out in the middle of nowhere, and you really need to know what you're doing and where you're going and what it takes to, carry a spot locator if you need that. But And we clear trails out there, put it in rolling grade dips, and it's phenomenal. But it's a resource that brings in commerce to every area that we are located in. I am sure that the Commerce Department here in Brevard will tell you it's good financially, but the impact with, like I said, more than probably 10,000 bikers coming through, a couple thousand equestrians, and hundreds of foot travel, I should say thousands of people foot traveling mm-hmm. through at the forest. The forest takes a beating.
It does, yeah.
So it's good to have volunteer groups, and we have them. There's hundreds of volunteers out there working on trails, and not only here, but in DuPont State Forest. But again, DuPont State Forest will close during weather like we're having right now, torrential downpours and rain. And Pisgah stays open.
Yeah.
So if you've traveled a long distance, whether you're a biker or a hiker or equestrian, let's say they come in from Charleston, South Carolina to ride, and it's wet, they may ride. We'd prefer them not to.
Yeah.
And the bikers prefer them not to. But if the biker comes in from Miami, Florida, and he's got 3 days up here, he can ride in Pisgah where DuPont's closed to him.
Yeah.
It helps DuPont. It doesn't help Pisco a whole lot.
Yeah.
And you got to be able to understand that. There's room for everybody. It's like I said, it's getting the water off the trails. If you let fast moving water on a trail for any distance at all, you're going to have a trail destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to blame something, blame Mother Nature, but she doesn't listen real well.
A film was just released that our good friend Tommy Pienick masterly put together of a little backstory on you guys. That was really cool to see. It was cool to hear some of the backstory, Tom, and cool to see how you're getting involved, Courtney. What was it like thinking of a way to show off backcountry horsemen?
Well, I'll tell you what Tommy told us. He said, just tell us what you're doing. It's a great story, and it's needed, and the people around here and in other states need to hear about it. I never thought about it that way. In many cases, it's a way of life. It's something we enjoy doing, and it helps everybody out. The bottom line is, if you're going to be out in the backcountry, you want the trails to be as safe and accessible as possible. And when there's huge amounts of timber down, it's more dangerous for everybody. If you don't get the water off the trails get destroyed. The people that are out there the people I've met are very courteous to each other, and they actually feel like they're in a little bit of heaven that they didn't know existed. So we talk about how we carry our equipment out there, what it takes to keep the horses and mules up, and the amount of property that takes, which in a sense, you know, you don't keep a horse in the backyard. They say you can keep a horse on an acre of land, but it'd be a mudlot if you did that. And we have unique challenges here, which Tommy knew about. We're in a rainforest.
Yeah.
And when you're in a rainforest, you need to deal with the rain, especially when you have pristine streams and rivers like we have with abundance of trout. And so we talked about keeping the horses, how to stay safe near a horse, what kind of equipment we use for packing chainsaws and equipment in, and how we can sustain ourselves for 5-10 days in the backcountry so we can get the major jobs done in a suitable fashion.
Which you're kind of in the process of right now. You've got big tent set up and everything deep out in the woods.
Yeah, we call it a base camp.
Yeah.
And I have a 12x12 tent set up with a wood burning stove and a 10-foot vestibule to keep wood dry. And it's out there mainly for trail work. But to be honest with you, I always carry a fly rod with me. And when it's small game season, I usually have a 22 or a shotgun around. So when I'm not working on trails, I do some small game hunting for grouse and fly fishing for trout. It's kind of nice to be out there in the middle of nowhere and have 2 fresh trout for dinner. Most of the time it's catch and release for me, but when I'm camping, I usually keep 2 for the supper table. So,
nice.
But again, we're not out there to suffer. We're out there to do something good for everybody that chooses to be in the backcountry.
Nice.
Well, and all that kind of encapsulates the heart and soul of Pisgah. This is what people have been doing for years and years. It's all the things that you're doing out there. And
yeah.
That's, you know, horses are also the heart and soul of Pisgah. That's why I think it's so important that this film is going to be a great opportunity for backcountry horsemen just to get the word out and kind of share what we do and why we do it and how important it is to keep it going and keep it alive and just have more support from our community.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great story.
Yeah, we're so fortunate to have that.
And Courtney's been there. She's looked at how we've developed to carry chainsaws, 2 chainsaws and all our safety equipment and gas and oil.
It's pretty cool.
On
yeah,
a pack
the whole
animal,
setup.
Something that backcountry horsemen developed because it wasn't there in the past.
Well, Tom, backcountry does a lot of things for members who are getting involved, right? Like if you get your chainsaw certification, you get a, what is it, backcountry gives you a chainsaw carrier?
Yes. Yeah,
for your saddle?
Scabbard for the chainsaw and a saddlebag
cool
to carry your gear in.
Yeah.
And the Forest Service provides many times chaps and helmets that are appropriate for safety. And then we do the safety meetings. We have a lot of hoops to jump through, but they're all about safety.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we make sure that we follow through.
Just making sure
with
everybody's
that
prepared when we're going out there to work.
One thing that I noticed in the film and that I've experience when dealing with horses over the years is it's not just grab your horse and go. There's a lot of prep time. There's a lot of post prep time and everything, or like a post wrap up time. So Courtney, how's a day look for going out to do trail work?
Oh yeah. Well, first of all, just making sure well before you even load your horse in the trailer that they're fit and healthy and their hooves are in good shape. They've been on a good diet, you know, they're healthy before you get them out there. They've been vet checked. Everybody's, you know, good to go. Like, we need to take care of our health. We also need to take care of their health. Growing up, I was a part of something, WNC Pony Club, Western North Carolina Pony Club.
Nice.
Which was great. I learned so many skills and that it's a very strict, like, by the book club, and it teaches kids, you know, I mean, probably over the top rules about horse care and horse safety, but a lot of that stuff has stuck with me my whole life, because like one of the main things is when you get off your horse after a ride, no matter but how long or short the ride, you take care of your horse before you take care of yourself. So there's just a lot of there's a lot of care that goes into getting equines out and just making sure that, you know, we're taking care of them because they're taking care of us.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. So yeah, it's a lot more than just throwing your, not to compare it to mountain biking, but it's a lot more than just throwing your bike on the rack and going out to the woods, you know, which I love too. I love the simplicity of biking now when I go out, whereas like trailering a horse, there's a lot more planning. You got to pack out hay. You've got to pack grain. Tom, actually, we have a great picture on our Instagram. Tom packed out to his campsite two hay bales on his pack horse. He had a hay bale on either side wrapped, and he did a cool, like, Tom's great with knots and packing, and he has a cool system, which he'll go over in the packing clinic that we do.
Nice.
But it's, the pictures are really cool. You should go check them out. They're, it's, is it your mule?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it Tilly?
Well, when I packed them, I packed all my horses and mules pack. Yeah. And the one she's talking about, I packed on Budweiser.
Oh, that was Bud. Yeah.
And I get a funny look when I tell people I've been out on Budweiser all day. But I used him as a pack horse that day and packed two bales of hay in for them to have feed, because that's how they keep warm.
Yeah.
They you see a lot of horses blanketed, probably because their owners are cold.
But, yeah.
If you want to keep a horse warm, keep them fed properly and give them plenty of hay, and they'll generate the heat they need to keep warm. But and Courtney's hitting the main points, because, you know, you're talking about a 1,000-pound, 1,200-pound animal, and right now I have six of them that I'm taking care of. And that means vet checks and Coggins before you go into a forest or a national park or DuPont Forest. Pretty much anywhere you need a Coggins test. If you cross state lines, you need a whole physical on board. That's not in a drop in the bucket when it comes to expense. That's part of it. Usually buying the horse is the least expensive thing you're doing.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, and the rest of it, you have them shoed. Some of them use boots that they put on and keep their horses' hooves trimmed. Most people still use iron shoes or steel shoes for their horses. And then you got saddle and tack and bridles and halters and pack saddles and deckers and the like that you have to keep oiled and in good shape. And then you got to keep your training up to
yeah.
be suitable to be out there doing the jobs we're doing.
You've got to be fit to ride. And like back to the talking about hay, you know, horses are foragers. They're made to, I mean, the longest a horse should go without eating really is about, what, 4 hours? Or something, they're always supposed to be out in the field grazing. So if they don't have a field to graze in, if we're keeping them out in the woods, they've got to have hay. Hay is the only other way they can supplement that foraging. So yeah, so you got to figure out all the logistics of that. So if you're packing way out in the woods, you got to figure out how to get something out there.
People
for them
always
to eat.
Ask me, how do you feed your horses when they're out there in the yeah. dead of winter? There's no grass. I refer them to the picture of me bringing in two bales of hay.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. So.
Was while the horses packed with the hay, that kept like wanting to try to eat the hay? Or
no, you wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
And yeah. that's why you wrap it. Well, two reasons. To keep it dry. And then there's a system, again, for wrapping and tying a bale up. There's a system for putting it on the decker or sawbuck saddle. So if you didn't wrap it, they would be turning their heads and yeah. and trying to eat when they're supposed to be focused on what you're doing.
Yeah.
I don't allow my horses or mules to eat when they're on the trail unless I'm totally stopped. They're focused on getting me to where I'm going safely. So
yeah. And yeah, they have to know that. You have to let them know that, because otherwise all horses are thinking about pretty much 24/7 is food. Like it, and food is everywhere for them. It's on the ground. It's the leaves, you know. It's a yeah. little twig of grass. So they're always thinking about food unless you let them
They'll
know otherwise.
They'll eat things on the trail that I never eat in a
We're
pasture.
Doing a job. Yeah, right. Yeah. It's funny. Food is a priority.
I think one of the things that people that ride find out very quickly is that and I do a lot of hiking, by the way, and I mentioned I do mountain biking too, not to the extent of quote mountain bikers, but horses, when you're on them, you're not watching where you're putting your feet. They take care of that for you, so you really get to see the forest and the streams yeah. and you'll see things you want to take photos of, because you're not concentrating on where that foot's going down. And if you're a biker, you better be thinking, I would say, 25 yards in front of you and what you're going to do, when you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the surrounding area is a little more in the, it's vague
yeah.
to you from where you're starting to where you're going as your objective. And when we're on horseback, we get to truly enjoy.
You're on a scenic ride.
Yeah.
That is a really good point. Cause
that is a good point.
like even when time. You're hiking, especially hiking here is not easy. You're always got to watch yeah. where your feet are. And like,
yeah.
you have to stop to be able to
yeah.
like, take in and
you're usually like
oh,
tired,
yeah.
you know, when you're just riding a horse, you're not usually tired depending on what you're riding. But
occasionally when I go in the base camp, I walk in
mm-hmm.
and that brings it right back to me, because you got rocks and steps and gravel and roots that you got to go over. And if you're not watching where you're putting your feet, you know, it twists an ankle or and it makes it for a rough day. And but I'm not seeing what I see when I'm on horseback.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. I'm just going to ask the question, like, and I know the answer to it, but what's the best way for us to be respectful of each other on the trail? Because that's always going to be, user conflict is always going to be there.
Always, yeah, that's a very good point.
Do you want to address that, Courtney? The triangle, if you're aware of that.
Yeah, well, yeah, we do have that triangle. What is it? Bikers yield to horses. Hikers yield to horses.
Right.
Pretty much everyone yields
well,
to horses.
Well, bikes are on the bottom. Bikes yield
right.
to both.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, right. Yeah. Hikers and horses. Mm-hmm. Right.
And we still run into people that don't know the triangle. And it is. Bikers yeah. yield to everyone.
Yep.
And then hikers yield to horses and so on.
Yeah, that's very true. I've been,
and we're seeing more
I've been
and more
brushed
of
by a bike before in DuPont. But that's not a good feeling when you're on a horse.
We call them pilgrims. There's a lot of people that are new to the forest, new to mountain biking,
yeah.
new to hiking, and they don't know.
They don't know. Yeah.
And we'll take the time to, our horses are used to a chainsaw right next to them.
Yeah, luckily.
In some cases, they're used to a bike running up the rear end, which is not the safest thing to do. But they're not green horses. They're not going to just spook on anything. And a lot of times we'll stop and we'll get off the horse. And if there's a family out there, we'll let a child sit in the saddle on top of a horse.
Mm-hmm.
That's still one of the biggest thrills that kids get. And they love it. And we don't mind taking the time to make that happen.
Yeah,
and we even carry food or treats for the horses, and we'll give them to bikers. You know, bike will come up closer to the horse and feed the horse. That does two things. It makes the biker a little bit more understanding of the horse, and it also takes away the fear of the horse from the biker.
Mm-hmm. And recognize that it's a person. Because a lot of times if you're on a bike, they don't recognize you as a person. You're just this, like, crazy moving thing.
A fast-moving bad guy.
Which they're prey animals, so their instinct is, like, danger. You know, when they see something fast moving through the woods, they're like,
Towards them.
It's going to... Yeah. It's a mountain lion. So...
It's nice I guess the only conflict area that we have is blind curves. And... I guess the worst place I can think of for that is on Spencer Branch or Fletcher Creek.
Yeah.
There's a lot of blind curves, and, you know, the local bikers here know that, and they're very alert to it. But some folks that come in from elsewhere travel much too fast, and they can't control their bike once they come on a family of, you know, three kids out hiking, and they got to stop.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing the head of steam you can get up on a bike going downhill.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes on
my
bike.
And you're going slow downhill on a horse, so it's the opposite.
Yeah.
Which, remember that one time, Tom, there was a big group of us out, and we were headed back to, we were at North Mills, and we were going down, I don't remember what we were going down, but it was pretty steep, but some bikers came up behind us, and there was a steep drop-off to our side, and we were like, we can't get over for you, so you're going to have to, you know, either... Yeah. Go really slow behind us or wait a little while. And so they were like, that's, you know, it was great, a great interaction with them. They were like, we're just going to hang out here for a while and let y'all, like, that worked out really well because it was like, look, we can't get out of the way. Sorry.
Yeah.
We've been working on trails all day. And I think they really appreciated that. They saw that we were working and that was a good interaction.
It's amazing how far common courtesy can go. And there's a lot of it in the forest.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot different when you run into someone in the forest in those situations than chatting on Facebook or
totally.
Discussing the trail etiquette on Facebook or something. When you're actually face-to-face out in the woods, people are much nicer in those real settings.
I will say that I think of horses differently when I'm in DuPont than I do Pisgah, because usually horses that you come across in Pisgah are more used to... Probably more used to bikes, more used to being out there, whereas like a lot of newer people will go to DuPont.
Yeah.
Newer equestrians will go to DuPont who don't have horses that aren't as familiar with bikes or stuff like that. So usually when I'm in DuPont and I see horses, it's like almost an automatic stop and get off my bike and start talking to the horse and stuff. Whereas like in Pisgah, I'm definitely going to stop and like, but usually I'm mostly seeing probably horses like going up to Middle Black or something. So I'm not like seeing you guys out you know, on the depths of it, which I'd be psyched to see you guys out there. So that's one thing that I wanted to touch base on was most horses you're probably going to encounter in Pisgah, not saying all, but most, are probably more experienced, and you're going to potentially have more newer users in DuPont. Would you guys agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
I do. But again, in a sense, it has to do with marketing.
Yeah.
You know, DuPont was in The Last of the Mohicans and all the waterfalls, and that's a draw for hikers and equestrians and bikers. And so you get a lot more green people on horseback and hiking and biking in DuPont because the marketing.
Yeah.
It has been fierce.
Well, and we've also got friends who do guided riding trips out there. So they're taking people who maybe have never even been on horses. And those horses are probably good because they're.
And one of the biggest things I can tell bikers and hikers is don't get behind a tree to think you're doing justice to the horse.
Don't hide.
Don't hide, because then immediately you come out and it could spook a horse. Mm-hmm. The best thing to do is get off the side of the trail. But be very visible and talk.
Yeah.
Speak to the people on horseback and they'll talk to you. That goes a long way in for everybody's safety.
Yeah, the sooner the horses recognize that you're human,
yeah,
the safer everybody is.
On the Appalachian Trail in the middle of nowhere, a big hiker with a huge backpack.
Oh, yeah, comes that's like out a monster to a horse.
Yeah, it's Sasquatch.
Man, they'll immediately take notice. Person starts talking, says, good afternoon, how are you doing? Appreciate you taking care of the trail. All of a sudden, the horse relaxes.
Yeah, and you feel that tense up in them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. They really put out an energy that everybody can sense. I feel like just their body language is so, I mean, at least to us, I feel like it's very obvious how they're feeling.
And when I'm packing, I may have two pack animals plus my horse. That's three horses that need to get past a biker or a hiker. And they're used to it. But again, a hiker or biker that's talking to the horses and is visible is much easier to pass and relaxes the horses. So it's just being helpful.
Well, Tom, I have a follow-up question for Michael's question for you, because I like hearing you talk about it. What about dogs on trails?
Ooh,
what do you have to say about that?
Yeah.
That's a whole nother.
Well, I'm speaking to equestrians and hikers and bikers all together. If you're not in a developed campground, you do not need to keep your dog on a leash. If you don't have your dog on a leash, you need to have them under control. Whether you have an electronic collar or you've taught them well enough where they'll come back to you. Again, my animals are trained and they deal with dogs. But there's a lot of folks that would be in DuPont. Well, you got to have them on, if you're in DuPont Forest, you got to have them on a leash, period.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you're in Pisgah, it's a hunting area. You can let your dog run loose.
And that's a great thing about Pisgah. That's, I like taking my dog and letting her run, you know, and so we don't want to tell people.
And I'm going to go to equestrians because I've seen bikers and hikers do the same thing. We have an equestrian that has a dog. Totally under control all the time, and he's on horseback. He calls that dog in. That dog comes in and gets near him.
Yeah.
I've seen equestrians out there that just the opposite. They have a dog, and the dog's in the
front of
everybody.
Dog's running through the horse's
runs
legs.
Up to the bikers.
Yeah, it's awful.
And that's not good.
That's the dog you leave. You leave at the trail.
So it's and when you're hiking, you're biking, you just realize you need to keep your dog under control. And here's a special note. Mules and donkeys, which produce a mule, you'll see them in a pasture. And what they're doing out in the pasture is they will run down a coyote and stomp them in the ground. They're out there to protect cattle and sheep.
That's what they're trained to do. Mm-hmm.
And that's why a burro or a donkey you'll see in a pasture. Well, a mule is kin to those. And if a dog is out in the pasture, they're more than likely a mule will go after that dog. And that is also true on a trail. Except the mules are under control by the rider. But still, if you let your dog run underneath that mule's feet, you could get both of them in serious trouble. So the key is enjoy the forest with your animals, but make sure they're trained well enough to keep them under control. If not, you need to keep them on a leash. And a special note, if you're out there and you're used to being into a developed campground and you carry a green bag to carry the dog, poop back out.
Yes.
So. Don't put it in the green bag and leave it.
There's no cleanup
crew.
Take
it out. Or don't put it in a green bag and just throw it off the side
that's
of the trail.
That's not a part
so
of what
Mother Nature
we do.
Can take care of it.
Well, I mean, yeah. We will, but it was not. That's not I've part had, of backcountry's job.
Yeah, I've had hikers and bikers as well as equestrians tell me, why are they leaving all these green bags on the trail? We know exactly what it is, and it's nasty. So
going back to the dog point, my dog is not familiar with horses and
Alice
or goats.
and she loves goats, though.
Yeah, she loves them. So she will bark and stuff at horses. And so I know, like, yeah, you got to keep your dog under control
barking
when you're in the woods.
Barking is something you can't control, though, you know. That's
Well, if I may make this point, my horses are used to dogs, and your dog could probably bark at them. In fact, when I was packing, and I had two pack animals behind me, I ran into this couple had three dogs, and one of them went nuts, barking and going after the horses. But again, my horses were used to it. And I said, don't worry, my horse has been trained around dogs. They're going to be fine with them. Then the dog wanted to follow us. Well, the group was going back to the parking lot, and the dog was going out with me. So I turned my whole group, my whole pack animals around, and I stood there with the dog barking at me until the owner could come back and get his dog. We work at that. We make as sure as we can that we don't present a problem. But trust me, if a person's out there on a green horse, the issue becomes more of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a trail rider and they've got a good trail horse, they probably are not going to have, and most horses won't have a problem with a dog.
Yeah.
But a mule is a different animal, and I'm just telling hikers and bikers, as well as equestrians, if you're out there and your dog gets under a mule, you're presenting a problem. And it can be a serious issue.
Yeah.
One of our riders, Max Gibbs, rides a mule, and I've seen a dog go lick on his legs, and the mule has done nothing.
Oh, Bill.
Very special mule.
He's a good mule, yeah.
And Max has worked on that.
Yeah.
But don't trust every mule to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Old saying, long old timer, Preston Roberts, rest in peace, told me was, one thing to think about animals, if they got teeth, they'll bite you. If they got feet, they'll kick you.
That's great.
The back
know.
End of a,
if you don't know them, you don't know.
Back end of a horse and a back end of a mule is not where you want to be.
Nope. Any other thing you before we kind of wrap things up? Anything else you guys want to touch base on?
The only thing I want to say is again, I'm honored to be an equestrian that has had the honor of working in Pisgah National Forest in many different roles as a volunteer, from teaching first aid to teaching cross-cut sawyer work, chainsaw work. Doing trail work shoulder to shoulder with other groups. And it's an honor to work with groups like Sorova and Carolina Mountain Club. And there's a multitude of other groups that have different names, Pisgah Cowboys. And the work that's being done in Pisgah, I don't hesitate to say it, 98% of it's volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
So if people see timber off the trails and bridges and footwalks, probably been made by volunteers, and if you got the time and you got the interest, we'd love to have them on board, whether they're an equestrian, whether they're a biker, or whether they're a hiker. All the groups would enjoy having more folks on board.
Tom, should we let everybody know when our meetings are, if anyone wants to join Backcountry Horsemen?
Absolutely. Thank you. We have the fourth Tuesday in the month. We meet at South Mills River Restaurant. We usually have dinner at 5, and the meeting starts at 6. The meetings are an hour long. They end at 7. Or if
seven
we get through
abruptly,
with business, we
seven.
Leave early. But we try to get to the point where we just don't like to hear ourselves talk. We do the business at hand, and then folks, because we have people that will drive 100 miles to be at the meeting and to come here and work. We have members that are members here and work 4 months out of the year from Montana, and they have a place here. We have them coming in from Alabama and Georgia and South Carolina. So it's that marketing worked good, but we need to get the word out. And at 5 o'clock, fourth Tuesday in the month, South Mills River Restaurant. And they have great food and a great menu, so we'd love to have anybody interested.
Yeah, they're great to us, too, over there at that restaurant.
Yes, they're very courteous to us, and we enjoy being there.
We're in the back room when you walk in.
Right on. If people want to find more about Backcountry Horsemen of Pisgah or just the club in general.
We have a website, and Courtney's been working with us on Instagram.
Yeah, and our website, you can find us at bcha.org, and that's Backcountry Horsemen of America. But there's plenty of information about all the chapters. And then you can find us on Instagram at BCH_Pisgah. And then we're also on Facebook. So Backcountry Horsemen of Pisgah on Facebook.
Right on.
Give us a follow. We'd love it.
And even though we have a phenomenal amount of equestrians within Transylvania County, we also have the largest equestrian group almost in the United States, just in the county, in Polk County, just next door, in Rutherfordton. And Polk, it's phenomenal. The National Equine Center, who had the World Equestrian Games, is one county over. So
it's amazing too. During the like show season, that place brings in crazy like amounts of people. And then like the top riders in the world come and show there and win like big money. I mean, it's so fun to go watch Saturday Night Lights. They have the show jumping series that happens there. Nice. It's really cool.
It amazed me. When they had the World Equestrian Games here, they would actually fly in from different countries and box cars with stalls in their box cars, and they would do health checks and everything while they're still on the plane, and then go to the equestrian center. So it's an industry that's flourishing. So and we're glad to be a small part of it.
Yeah, Jessica works at Greenville-Spartanburg Airport, and she sent me photos of like some of the airplanes that came in.
Oh my gosh,
bringing
did she really?
Horses. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's
some of those
so
horses
cool.
are treated a lot better than human beings.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, pampered. 747s flying over from the Middle East and stuff like that.
Amazing. Oh,
yeah.
Insane. That was probably that prince that came.
Yeah, that was the prince.
Oh, okay. Okay. I heard a lot
he
about
had
him.
Two airplanes.
Two airplanes.
One for the horses.
Well,
one
he couldn't
for him.
Leave that one horse back.
Right. One extra airplane.
So it's crazy. Well, awesome. Wild. Well, thank you guys so much for coming out. Most importantly, thank you guys for the trail work you do. It is so much appreciated. And Courtney, we're going to have to get on board with getting our chainsaw certs going.
Let's do it. Yeah. I'm in. We'll figure out those dates and yeah.
And we'll post up those dates a little ahead of time.
Well, I can pretty much promise you it'll be April or May, and then we'll get it done.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much, and we'll see you out on the trails.
Thank you. See you on the trails.
Appreciate it.
So I think as mountain bikers, we don't often think about other users' experiences in the woods, for one. But for two, we don't stop to think about the other user group's contributions. And I think sometimes you'll even see equestrians sitting high on their horses, holding a set of loppers and pruning back the corridor. And most people just never notice or appreciate this work or that it's even happened because it's above your head. But they're there, they've done it, and they deserve the recognition for it.
Especially as a tall person, I absolutely appreciate them lopping those overhead rotos from fish hooking my helmet.
That's a thing a short guy like me rarely ever experiences, thankfully. But,
yep.
Well, let's talk about the weather. What's the forecast looking like? It's looking kind of wet, huh?
Yeah. Despite all this chat about us talking about t-shirt weather and stuff, it was like sleeting and snowing in the area this morning. But after this front moves out, it's going to be pretty warm this weekend, so get your riding in while you can. We've got more showers coming in this week. It's definitely going to be on the warmer side, but as that front moves through, it looks to be wet for the next couple of days, so definitely make it count.
Yeah, just keep your raincoat close, and also we're on the countdown for daylight savings time, just a few weeks away.
Ooh, yeah.
And hopefully we'll be able to get back into the swing of after work rides and t-shirts again.
Yep. Oh, and we had a leap year day yesterday.
That's right.
Well, guys, that is a wrap on this week's episode, or I should say this month's episode. But as always, you can find us on social media. Just search Pisgah Podcast. And we got the web store going with shirts, bottles, koozies, and all kinds of little goodies when you order a package. So check that out at PisgahPodcast.BigCartel.com.
If you have a little hitch in your giddy-up, check out the Backcountry Horsemen of Pisgah. Click subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's where you can find some back episodes. here or on Spotify and your favorite podcatcher. Buy some Pisgah podcast merch to support the show, and check out our other show, the Gravity Co-op's Hot Seat, and also the shows that we replay mountain bike race runs for on the Gravity Co-op. Thank you guys for listening.